Yeah, we'll be in touch.
You're listening to The Debrief with Dave O'Neill and talking to a comedy legend. Everyone who comes on my podcast is a comedy legend. How long have you been in comedy, Matt?
About 4.5 years.
Matt Stewart, ladies and gentlemen. But you won Raw, didn't you? Did you win Raw?
Yeah, I didn't win Raw.
What year was that?
2014.
You've only been in comedy for 4.5 years.
Yeah. It was a very early gig when I did Raw.
How old were you when you started comedy?
29.
Oh, you were a late starter.
Yeah. There's Lawrence Mooney age, I believe.
Carl Chandler, too.
Carl
Chandler, Moon
Man. Is a 29-year-old as well?
29, he was 29.
Oh, it's a very exclusive club.
What did you do before comedy?
I was doing some comedy things, like sketch stuff with some friends. One of the guys was on tonight, Andy Matthews.
Andy Matthews, very funny. I've never seen him before. I know who he is. I've seen him in writers' rooms.
Yeah, he writes a lot of writing. Yeah. Alistair Tremblay-Birch was a big writer as well.
ATB.
ATB. So me...
Another comedy legend.
That's right. A lot of legends around, aren't they? They're legends to me, but they... So the three of us plus...
that's your generation.
Yeah, we did sketch, like online sketches and stuff.
Yeah. And I was drinking my orange juice.
Oh, man.
We're going off.
This is good orange juice.
We're not in a car. We're in like a... Gavin, we're in Tasmania, basically, because you're married to a Tasmanian.
Yes.
And I'm doing a gig at Jokers, and we're both at Jokers, this great club at Gavin Baskerville, who's a former Perth via Melbourne-based comic who moved to Tassie and started a club here with his partner.
It's a fun club. I think that's the third time I've done it.
Yeah, it's great. And we're in a basement flat of Gavin's wife's mother. And there could have been some crimes committed here. Who knows?
I would say almost definitely.
It's like a former garage. It's got a very low ceiling. Anyway, enough of that. But the Jokers is at the Polish Club, which is a classic ethnic club. They're all the same around Australia. They tend to be a harsh brick building with foreign beer and good food in there. And the Polish guys behind the bar.
And so many beers. So many Polish beers. They had them lined up. I reckon they had 20 different Polish beers.
Last time I was here, Anthony Morgan, he is a comedy legend.
He is. He's another one of my absolute favourites.
He supported me because he lives down here. And the guy came to pick me up and goes, "Oh, your support act's a bit drunk." And when I got there, Anthony was blaming the Polish beer. He goes, "They're bigger than normal and they've got a higher alcohol percentage."
Been there. We've all fallen for that trap.
Yeah, fallen for that
trap. The Polish trap. I liked it halfway through a bit when you realised that you were...
I do a joke about a Polish guy next door to me, which is a true story. Well, no, that's not true. I lived next door to a very old Polish guy when I lived in the western suburbs of Melbourne. And yeah, I do a joke and then I said, I just realised I'm in the Polish club. I'm doing a joke about an old Polish man. I can see the barman giving me dirty looks. Because he's a genuine Polish guy, the barman.
He's very genuinely Polish.
Very genuinely Polish. But we used to live next door to this guy called Stan. And he was a bit of a hermit. And he was in his late 80s, and he used to give me snippets of information about his life, sort of like I seriously was putting out the bins at one day. He goes, "I tell you a story. You want a story?" I'm like, "Yeah, I love stories, man." And he said, "I was in the camp. I was in the camp, the Nazis." I'm like, "Oh my god!" And he told me that his job was to he made shoes in the camp. Yeah, this is not. Anyway, so when he died, right, and he was always a bit scared. He was always like, you wouldn't see him on the street a lot. When he died, the police had to jump my fence and they found his body. And hello to the people that bought that house. Anyway, renovated it. Anyway, they asked me, "Did he die in the house?" I'm like, no, he died in the hospital. He died right there. Anyway, Stan, it was revealed. The cops showed me all these papers. I don't know why they showed me his personal papers. But he was accused of being a Nazi war criminal.
Oh, fuck.
Yeah. And because he told me this story about how he was walking down Ackland Street one day, standing, he goes, "And the Jewish people run out and they push me to the ground. And they said, 'That's the man from the camp.' And I said, 'I made the shoes there.'" I'm like, oh my God. So he went to court. Because they had his witness statement from the court case. Yeah, anyway. I don't know if he was found guilty or not guilty.
Where do we go from there on a podcast?
Well, you said you had a great Nazi story. Everyone's got a next-door Nazi.
Next-door Nazi?
Like Stan.
Anyway. I don't think I've ever lived next door to a Nazi. It is funny. I heard another story about you recently where a cop was telling you stuff that they shouldn't be. Does that happen to you a lot where cops just open up?
Yeah, occasionally. Yeah. cops. Well, I've been pulled over several times and I've got off because they recognise me, which is great. It was not great because I was speeding. I was going between gigs and this cop pulls me over, this older cop and a younger cop, and the older cop goes, "Do you realise you're doing 100 kilometres in a 60 zone past my police station?" Like, he owned it. Anyway, so he goes and talks to the younger cop, and he comes back and he throws the license back in. He goes, apparently you're some kind of comedian, my colleague said, so we're going to let you off. If it was up to me, I would fine you. Because I didn't find what you did very funny at all. Now, you shouldn't speed. And I didn't realise I was speeding.
But, I mean, well, you didn't realise you were going nearly double.
Yeah, it's not
only good. 40 Ks over the limit.
It's not good, but, you know, it's...
I love
it. It happened.
The younger cop overruled and said, oh, apparently you're a comedian.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I didn't know there was that kind of license to speed.
No, it's interesting, isn't it? No, yeah, well, they let people off, though. Have you ever been let off by the police?
Never been let off, but I've never been a comedy legend.
Yeah. No, I just appointed you.
Oh, sorry. So well, from now on.
So you must have done a job, though, before.
Yeah.
What did you train to be?
I did an arts degree.
You're like me.
But I only took 4.5 years.
I took 8.5. That's true.
4.5 seemed like too long. One semester, I did one unit.
Where did you go?
Monash Clayton.
Oh, that's a long way out.
Not from Moorabbin, where I was living. No, it was one bus.
Moorabbin, so...
Part of the attraction to it.
Let me ask you this question. You grew up in Moorabbin. Did you ever go to the Moorabbin Bowl?
Yeah, oh yeah.
Surely AMF. Every birthday. It's still there.
Yeah, it's still there.
Wow. And are you really a St Kilda fan?
Saints fan, yeah.
You did some very funny material about the Saints tonight.
You used to walk down there.
Yeah, you used to walk down there?
Yeah.
I've been to that ground. I'm right not at the footy, end. But that's an amazing ground.
It's been knocked over at the moment. They're redeveloping it and moving back there as a training.
Yeah, that's good, isn't it?
Yeah, it is cool.
What do you call that ground?
It used to be called Linton Street. Now it's called Linen House Oval or something shit like that.
I hate it when they do that. It doesn't have a really good catchy name like Windy Hill, though, does
yeah,
it?
Yeah, Windy Hill's great. I live near Windy Hill now.
So then what did you do, though?
I worked in Moorabbin as an air conditioning salesman.
That's right.
So real.
I don't know why I know this about you. I've asked you this question before.
I think Kappa loves that as a... He loves that as Nick the Kappa. Most... boring detail of about a human ever, that I used to be a Moorabbin air conditioning salesman. He's like, I'm falling asleep in the middle of this sentence.
Yeah, but you know what? I love air conditioning because we grew up in houses that didn't have any air conditioning. Now I've got aircon and I love it.
Yeah.
It was one of the things I insisted on getting when I had a house, moved into a new house. Dude, were you a gun salesman?
Oh, looking at me, yeah. I was unconventional, I think. I think my
were you honest?
My trick was that I was just brutally honest about everything.
Yeah.
And so every now and then someone would be like, look, I at least trust you.
Yeah, he's not ripping us off, yeah. This guy.
But how long
were you a salesman for?
About 7 years.
Well, how did you get into sales?
I went on a backpacking trip through Europe and I got back and I needed a job very quickly and my cousin was working as an air conditioning salesman.
Wow, fabulous.
And he's
business.
Like, there's a job opening up and... yeah, it was a summer job. I was meant to do it for one summer. And it was just
7 years later.
They were really cool people to work for.
Yeah, those
super supportive. They were like, they were free to let me go
do gigs
or whatever I wanted to do. You know, they were very
did you meet supportive. Your now partner when you were an air conditioning salesman? Did she see you at your lowest?
Yeah, yeah. She did. Yeah.
Well, that's good in a way.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I mean, is
well, I think
was that lower than this?
Sitting in a basement garage flat in Hobart.
I'm not having a go at Hobart. I love Hobart.
Yeah, no, we love Hobart.
Hobart's great.
Hobart's great.
We had a great dinner at Winston's.
Yeah, that was great, that pub.
That's
a
really
like a young
good pub.
Person's pub.
Yeah,
it's like young trendy hipsters out.
And we just felt really at home in there.
Oh, I felt old. But anyway, that's all right. You've got a beard and stuff. You look young. Because salesmen's are very... I'm always impressed by really good salesmen.
Yeah.
Or women, because I worked in radio for years. People make good money.
I thought you were saying really good salesmen or women, like two categories.
Women. I'm really impressed by really good women. But I noticed that in sales, the ones that did well were either very attractive or the blokes were sporty. So they could take these clients out for lunch and go, what about those pies? What about those saints? Anyway, you want to buy some more advertising?
I did not tick either of those boxes.
No, but you'd like the saints.
I could chat about lots of stuff.
One of my, a guy I know, okay, he's got a name drop here. The guy from The Music Man. Do you remember The Music Man?
Yeah, hey,
The Music Man.
Yeah.
Yep. Brooksy, the lead of The Music Man, sells shipping containers. Huh? That's his job. He sells shipping containers to... people that need them. So he's not door knocking on me and you and saying, you know, she's going out to industrial hubs and selling shipping containers. And so he said for a long time, the Music Man thing got him in the door.
Right.
Because you know, it's Brooksy from the Music Man. Oh, I saw you on Hey Hey. Anyway, so that started to fade. So he employed Peter Dacos, the Macedonian Marble. Yeah. For people that don't know footy, he's a Collingwood legend.
Still, Dacos. Massive legend. I think one of his sons is still making fame.
His son had his debut the other day. So he said they go to these... I don't know if he still Dakes are still doing this, but this was a couple of years ago. They would go to these industrial waste hubs around Melbourne and say Bayswater, and they go into the reception and say, "Hi, we're here to sell you a shipping container." And the reception would go, "Oh, we're not really looking for a shipping container." And he'd go, "Hey, just tell your boss that Peter Dacos is in the foyer." And he goes, "Not once have they been turned down." It's like blokes just run out of their offices. Oh, my God. Dacos is here.
That is a great trick.
Yeah. Well, maybe you should have a footy career.
I think it was a bloody footy career. One time I sold an air conditioner, right? And the installer was talking to... The installer was telling me the story later on. He was talking to the owner of the house and he goes, who sold this one? Like, I don't understand how he thought this would work or whatever. And the guy, the owner's like, oh, he was a pretty... It's kind of like a stoner kind of guy. I'm not a stoner, but he's like, he's a kind of like a stoner kind of guy.
And that was you.
And then at the time I was doing community TV live on 31 in the mornings.
Oh, mate.
And he goes, hang on, that guy. Because it was on the TV in the corner of the room. Like, what the odds of that happening? Selling an air conditioner and the guys watching Channel 31.
31. Very, very slim. Even though I've done Channel 31 shows back in the day, and people, so they see you on it. Definitely people do see you on 31.
Yeah, people who watch it love it. Like, right into it.
Yeah. So you did a bit of that community TV stuff.
Yeah, that's where I met Alan, Andy, and Beck, and all the stupid old people who are.
So that's now. That's your studio in Brunswick.
That's right, yeah. So the five of us all met doing breakfast TV for 31.
Oh, my God. And then you set up your own sort of production company.
Yeah, that's right.
And you do TV shows, tours.
Yeah.
And you do podcasts from there, don't you?
Yeah, we've got a little podcast studio.
I've been to that studio, and guess what? There's no aircon.
No, there is
not. Bloody hot.
No, I know how much it costs, and we cannot afford it.
I've been listening to your podcast, and you actually talk about the warm room.
Fuck, it's so hot.
And I always go, I know that room. Your co-host Jess was saying, "No one knows what you're talking about." I think I know what he's talking about. I've done a podcast. I've done Kappa's podcast in there.
Yeah, that's it. I really enjoyed that episode.
It's great episode. It was fun.
The first episode.
Yeah, it was. That's right.
Yeah, my favorite kind of podcast. Listen to Australian comedians who've been going around for a decade
years.
Or two.
Yeah,
just with you had so many stories.
Oh, hundreds. So I just told you the one about my next door neighbor Nazi Stan, and you weren't impressed. That's not really a stand-up story.
I was very impressed by that. I just didn't know what to do with it.
Yeah,
exactly. Recorder it in my face.
Exactly. It's hard. Nazis are going to be hard.
Look, like I just want to go on the record and say I'm entirely against Nazis.
Yeah.
And Stan sounds like I don't care if he was making shoes or what.
Yeah.
I reckon even Nazi shoes, I reckon no good.
Yeah, I think I don't know what he was doing in that. I had to go to his funeral. I had to speak at his funeral.
What?
Yeah, I know, because there was
speaking
no one else.
At a Nazi funeral.
Yeah.
Dave, what have you done?
The Australian Patriots were there. Oh, no, there weren't many people there. There was his lawyer, a very distant relative, and us. Yeah, it was... look, you know, he lived a very lonely life. So, enough about Stan. I'm sick of talking about Stan. But yeah, what was it like tonight at Jokers in Tasmania? The crowd seemed... was it politically correct, or I couldn't work it out?
I'm a pretty politically correct guy, but I reckon there was some sort of a nervousness when you were edging towards something or
sexual.
I think I at one point I said something about suicide, and that definitely took the breath out of the room.
That was funny though.
There was a few little moments where people were just like, I think just little trigger words without. Worrying about the context that
Nazis,
much.
I talk about Nazis. I talk about my dad getting more medals every year because he's a war veteran.
I think that stuff went quite well.
Yeah,
they really love the pedophiles.
Yeah, I know. I do. I know. That's the thing. I did a school in Ballarat, which was a hotbed of pedophiles. And the woman said beforehand, not kids, it was just parents and teachers. And I do a lot of those gigs. And she said, please do not do any pedophile jokes. Because this was one of the bad, and there are some survivors here. We're trying to rebuild this school. I'm like, yeah, no worries. And then when I'm on stage, I've got so much stuff that seems to reference. My first routine's about how I go to the park a lot. Well, my kids are at school, so I go by myself and hide in the bushes. And then I'm thinking, you see this woman up the back of the room, like, looking horrified. Anyway.
That's what you opened with.
That's what I opened with. Then I talk about the scouts and, oh, God.
Bailing on a lot of lines.
Yes. But, yeah, it was interesting because, you know, I remember being in Hobart a couple of years ago and doing this room. And then when the lights went up and I looked at the crowd, I thought, oh, they're all ABC viewers. They're more your ABC.
Which is your day job.
Yeah, yeah, I do ABC radio and
so
stuff.
So it makes sense that that's who they would be.
Yeah, yeah, and they see you from Spicks and Specks too. Yeah.
Does your radio show get down here?
No. I'm just filling in on the ABC, but no, they've got their own breakfast announcer. It used to be Andy Muirhead. He was convicted of having pornographic images, but he used to be a comedian in Tasmania. I used to see him at gigs here.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, yeah. And I said, how are you going? He goes, not good. I'm going to jail tomorrow. Oh, God. Anyway, gone down a very bad path. But
how has this happened?
But, you know, someone told me that Hobart's got one of the highest levels of tertiary education.
Yeah, it feels like a very smart city.
A bit like Canberra.
Canberra's very similar.
Yeah. Canberra's very similar.
Which, and normally, this feels like normally the higher the tertiary education level, the more progressive.
Yeah.
I say progressive, you say PC.
Yeah, exactly. Which I don't mind. I don't mind that at all. But because I do such mainstream broad gigs, a whole range of gigs, you've got to adjust your material accordingly.
Yeah, right. And how far into the show are you figuring that out? Because, I mean, tonight there's a few acts before. But you can't really make a call based on everyone else necessarily.
Yeah, you sort of can. But you look at your jokes and go, oh, I won't do that stuff, I'll do that stuff. If you're at like a footy club and they like really swearing and rude stuff, you just do all that. You look through your jokes and go, oh, I could do that one. They're whereas tonight just was more a thinking crowd.
Yeah,
I'd say.
I think it was definitely seemed like a smart audience. I thought it was a good crowd. It was a good show, I reckon.
Yeah, we killed it. You were a great MC.
We smashed it.
We smashed it. And Andy was on, your mate.
Andy Matthews.
And local comic Rob
Breslin.
Very funny. He's very funny.
So funny. Yeah, he's great.
He's great. Well, good times. Good times was had by all. I'll tell you what. So why did you... It's interesting because you haven't followed the path of a traditional stand-up where you're just doing gig. You're sort of moving more into the media. Is that correct? Because your podcast is quite big, isn't it?
It is, yeah. But
what's it called again?
Do Go On.
Do Go On, yeah.
Yeah, people seem to like it. But
you met a fan there tonight?
Yeah, there was a listener there tonight. Phil.
Who I picked on. Down the front.
You picked on him in... I mean, if you call going, you're a very beautiful man picking on, then sure. But I wouldn't call that picking on.
Yeah,
that.
But also he had a very old person's name for a very young man.
Phil.
Philip. Which Philip. Is more my generation.
Philip is an
old. And he looked 20. Man. He said he was almost 30.
Yeah, he'd be 20.
And he had a mate with an Icelandic name.
Yes.
Have a go. We can't even remember the name. Nichol or something like that.
Start with S, but that's all I've got.
Scenery. And I said, are your parents Icelandic? No. Have they ever been to Iceland? No.
But he was, you said, is it made up name? He said, yeah, I guess. He wasn't giving a lot away. You really had to delve. You're a qualifier? Is that what you said?
Oh, I can't even remember what I said.
He said, I'm a real qualifier.
And then he said, then I talked to another guy who had a brain injury.
Really picking him out.
I know, I'm good at that. That's happened to me before, but he gave me his book. He's written a book about his brain injury.
He was great value. He sat front row center.
Yeah. He was laughing a lot, and he said he just loves a laugh because he was working as an engineer, and he fell off a trailer and took a quarter of a kilo of his brain out.
What?
Yeah. And he went into a coma for 3.5 weeks.
Fucking hell.
I'll lend you the book. I've got the book.
That's all. He brought a book in.
Yeah, I swapped books with him.
Oh, that's awesome.
Yeah, so I'm going to read it.
Have you plugged your book on here before?
I've got a book.
With the Devo hat?
Yeah, with the Devo hat, the Summer of 82.
What do they call them? They're not flower pots. They're called sun.
It's an energy dome.
Energy dome.
But yeah, they used to call them flower pots.
Right.
The flower pot on the head. But getting back to you. So you've gone down that route where you've set up the studio.
I guess, well, in a lot of ways, I started there and then I did stand up after I'd already done
some
media stuff.
I get it.
But I don't know, I wanted to do stand up for a long time. I saw you in, what year was your Unfit for Life?
It's 2001, I reckon.
2001. So I've been going to see shows a long time. But it was that funny thing where I think some people just go, this is what I want to do, I'm going to do this. And I was more like, this is amazing. Imagine if you could do something like that. Yeah. You know, it didn't even seem possible.
No, well, of course not. If you grew up in Moorabbin, what is possible? Yeah. But no, it's similar to my. I grew up in Mitcham, and you didn't. The thing is, you didn't know any comedians.
Yeah.
You didn't know how to do it, and you thought they were special people.
Totally.
I thought they must have come from a special place, and then when I got into it, I realised, no, they're not special. It's just normal people who just had a crack one day.
Yeah, that's right. It's amazing.
Yeah, because I was in bands. We all formed bands in the 80s because we knew there was a guy at our high school who was Richard Pleasance, who was the bass player in Boom Crash Opera.
Wow.
Who had lots of hits, and we're like, oh, wow, if he could do it. We all formed bands. We were terrible musicians, but you got gigs, you met girls, it was good fun. But then after a while, I just went, oh, comedy would be so much better. You have to carry equipment.
Right.
You have to have the drummer load his drum kit out.
Did you ever bring the bass along to...
Yeah, I played it in gigs. Yeah, I would have played it at that Unfit for Life. Right. I played my bass on stage.
The thing I remember most vividly is the start where you came out miming to a song with a rose between your teeth.
Air Supply.
Air Supply. I'm like, this is rock star comedy. That was like using the space, a great rock venue.
The Hi-Fi.
I've seen so many great bands there, but you were using it like, if you just stood there and told jokes, right? I think it was the right way to start a show in that venue.
That that year was the same year that before me was Johnny Vegas with his pottery wheel.
No shit.
Yeah, where he used to get up a female from the crowd, and I thought they were a plant, but they weren't. And he's an actor now. He doesn't do stand-up apparently anymore. Maybe he's got back to it. Big fat bloke and very funny. But watching his show was like being taken hostage because it was sort of half real. And he'd talk about being a pottery student at TAFE in England. Yeah. And then he'd get up a girl from the... And he could really do pottery on the wheel. And he'd get up a girl from the crowd and he'd do the scene from Ghost and play that, oh my truth. And then put his muddy hands all over this...
Oh my God. That's why you were assuming it was a plant.
Yeah, I thought it was a plant.
Surely he wouldn't.
And then I was on in the middle, so then you get a different audience in. And then Mighty Boosh run after me. Fair to say, whatever happened to these people? You know what I mean?
Wow, that's a hot lineup.
Yeah, and the Boosh. I remember talking.
The Boosh were big back then.
No, they had a big, massive cult following. They hadn't done their TV show,
right?
But they had a big. They got a big cult following, kind of almost immediately, because you know Noel was so good looking. And Julian was very funny. Their show was very funny.
Did they win the Barry?
Yeah, I think they did. I think they did that year. Yeah, they did for the Arctic Boosh. And they said, oh, yeah, we're going to go back and do a TV show now. And, oh, yeah, good luck, boys.
Good luck. Anyway. Yeah, have a go.
And then they became huge. But they were very funny. They were big fans of the Goodies. Julian loved the Goodies.
I grew up on the Goodies.
Yeah, because I remember I had to go and do an interview with Tim Brooke Taylor for TV or something I was doing. And he's like, oh, wow, I'd love to meet Tim Brooke Taylor. So I said, well, he probably has by now. You'd hope so.
Yeah, imagine.
But the Goodies toured. I saw them. They toured. It was very. They played that theme song, you know.
Goodies.
And the crowd just went crazy, and they came out on a walking frame, but like a three-piece walking frame, like a tandem. Well, it was very good. They're very good.
That's very good stuff. Tandem walking frame is funny.
But you know, when you see them now, you go, oh, Graham Garden was actually, he was the best one, I reckon. Because I used to love Tim Brooke Taylor.
Right. And I think as a kid, I liked Bill Oddie because he had a beard, right? Yeah. I think it's just often it's the most easily physical trait that you can grab onto.
He was like the rock and roll kind of dude. He used to do all the music and stuff. Right. He wrote all the songs, apparently. Ah, the Goodies. See, better talk about the Goodies and Nazis. I bet you they did a Nazi episode.
They
must have done a Nazi episode.
It's a show that I haven't been brave enough to go back to. I assume it hasn't aged well.
Some of them are funny because, yeah, my partner's got it out for the kids and she's like, oh my God, the portrayal of women in this is not good.
Right.
You know, they're always dressing up
as... PC? No, not PC.
Not PC, very un-PC. It's very un-PC. And there's always... Tim Brooke Taylor's always dressing up as a woman. And he's quite pretty. Like, whereas Bill Oddie doesn't make a good woman, but Tim Brooke Taylor is very attractive, man.
Yeah, it was back in the days of comedy when there weren't any females. So the males had to...
That's a dress up.
There was a real shortage back then. Yeah. They had no other options.
I know. Unbelievable. Well, they started with the Monty Python crew and all those guys. The same generation. People will be talking about us like this in 30 years' time.
Oh, no doubt.
So that's interesting that you've done, but you still do a fair bit of stand up, do you?
Yeah. Well, I'd call that my main creative whatever. I was about to say outlet.
Yeah.
Sounded like I was being too scientific about it.
Are you working on anything?
I'm a real scientist, Dave.
Well, you used to sell aircon, mate.
Oh, yeah.
Are you working on any other bigger projects?
At the moment, the main thing I'm thinking about is festival shows, which I got like a month and a less than 2 months till go to Perth.
And what's it called?
It's called, what is it called? It's called Dry Ginger Mail.
Oh, that's a good title, because you have got red hair.
I've got red hair. I'm a male. It's very clever and awful. I don't know. It's on that, you know, that spectrum somewhere between good and the worst.
One light you can look and go, that's really funny. The next day you go, what did I do that for? Fuck?
Yeah, I've already, like, when I thought of it, I'm like, yeah, that works.
But, you know, I thought that the same about Unfit for Life, the show you saw about 20 years ago. I remember thinking, that's a really good title. The next day I'm thinking, what have I done? It's the worst title ever.
I know, it's really stuck in my head.
Oh, you're a big fan, fair enough.
Big fan. I can't believe I'm in a bunker with you.
The end of the world is coming. Anyway, look, you're listening to The Debrief with Matt Stewart. Hey, this episode of The Debrief is brought to you by Sheba. It's a great rideshare app where all the drivers are women. That's right, every single driver is a woman. So set up your account by downloading the Apple or Android app, and multiple users can use the one account. Enjoy the one account. And also, this is a great idea for dads like myself. You can set up an account for your daughters. Corporate accounts are available too. Sheba also takes booking. It's female-only driving service. You're back on The Debrief. We're in a bunker in Tasmania. Normally I'm in the car, but no, we got dropped off here by Daryl.
Daryl Peebles.
The comedy legend from Tasmania. Yeah. He used to be in a double act down here in Tasmania. Really? Yeah.
We rode with his vest. His vest was hanging up in the car, I reckon.
Oh, that's probably used to pull that out. He used to do musical comedy.
Yeah.
With another guy.
He gave me his card. He's Dr. Comedy or something.
Yeah, right. Oh, yeah. No, he does kids shows, I think.
Yeah. He's a very funny man.
He was also in the Navy.
Really?
Yeah, he was in the Navy, Daryl.
That's a guy. He should write a book.
Yeah, he'd have a fascinating life. Okay, I've got my debrief questions. What went well tonight and why, do you think, Matt?
The headline was great.
Oh, yeah, that was me, but yeah.
I mean, actually,
it didn't go that well. It was okay.
No, I thought you did well. I think you did really well.
Well enough.
Hey, Dave.
Hey, you talk yourself down.
No, I thought everyone was very funny. So it was a Christmas-themed episode. Show. And before the break...
What was that? It's like a parcel.
It was a parcel. And I didn't realise that I had control to stop the music. And so I'm going, all right, this is going on. And on and on. How are we going? You guys still... And I'm making fun of it. I'm going... Oh, bloody, I think it already is Christmas. So Merry Christmas, everyone.
And they're playing the Lou Vega Christmas mix.
Yeah. And it,
apparently you had the power to stop
it. Eventually someone's like, whenever you're ready. And I'm like, oh, fuck, have I got the power? Stop it now then. Let's stop it.
Well, that segues into the next question, what didn't go well and why? And I think the Christmas parcel.
I think, and that was, you know, in the hands of a real pro. I think that could have been a lot of fun.
What any organisational hazards that got in the way tonight?
I mean, I've listened to your podcast a good amount of times, and I am not at all prepared for these questions, isn't that?
Polish beer, were you like Morgs and the Polish beer
Polish
got in your way?
Polish beers are great. Yeah, yeah. I had the IPA, a Polish IPA, a Polish Indian Pale Ale.
How was that?
It was nice. It was different.
One organisational hazard that got in the way was that we were at that pub, the Winston, and your vegetarian tacos took a long time to come out.
It really did. I ordered first, and your chicken burger came out a good 10, 15 minutes before mine.
I feel that the chef was punishing you for being a vegetarian.
Which is, feels like chicken should take longer to cook. Than zucchini.
Oh, I just reckon they have all the chicken pre-prepared, and then he goes, "We've got a vegetarian." Or he's like, "Oh God, you got to bloody grate the zucchini." How can we do better next time?
Look, I mean, why? These feel like questions that you're more qualified to answer than me. Tell me, what could I have done better next time?
No, Dave? I thought you were pretty good. I thought you were really good because MCing can be like one of the hardest jobs.
I love it.
You set it up well. You told them to clap and give a bit of energy to the room. Because the worst thing is when comedians get up to MC, they don't explain what's going on. You explained the night, which was really good. You didn't go on after me and do 20 minutes of material and bring the house down. I've had MCs that do that.
I heard that long ago. It always rings in my head that you never do material after the headliner.
Once I did a winery in the Yarra Valley with... we won't name him, we'll just call him Lawrence Mooney. And he was the MC, and of course, in the wiring, he's just getting more pissed. And so I headlined. It was a long night, and Mooney was having a great time, and they were loving him. And so I said, anyway, I did my half an hour, and I said, okay, blah, blah, blah. Here's Lawrence Mooney back again. And you could see in Mooney's eye, he goes, all right, we've had a great night. And then he just takes the mic out of the stand. He goes, the Yarra Valley's pretty good, isn't it? I love living up here in the Yarra Valley. So I'm just like, I just drove off. I could hear him going as I drove out the driveway of the winery. He was still going. But good on him. He was loving it so much. Now we can play a song now.
Oh, this is hard.
Yeah, because are you a big music head, are you?
Yeah, I think it's one of the things I spend a lot of time with.
Really?
Listening to music.
Well, what sort of music do you like?
Pretty wide range. I'd say I whittled down my top three bands to Pantera, Tism, and the Beatles. But
that's quite a Pantera is an odd one.
Yeah. Well, I mean, you know,
they're like a heavy metal band, aren't they?
Yeah, they're like a Texas heavy metal band from the 90s.
Yeah.
Into the early 2000s.
Have you ever seen Pantera?
Yeah, I saw them in 2001.
Were they good or?
They weren't that good that night. Hmm. But it was right at the end
of their career.
Yeah, the guitarist got murdered like 2 years later.
Got murdered?
Yeah, on stage in America.
How?
He was gunned down. Pantera.
Well, people didn't like, gee, that's a very negative reaction to a concert.
Pantera started falling apart, right? The singer and the rest of the band were having issues. So they were like, there was a long hiatus. So the rest of the band, well, the drummer and the guitarist, Dimebag Darrell and Vinnie Paul, started a side project.
I love Vinnie Paul. We're going, yeah.
Vinnie Paul, yeah. Hyphenated. Vinnie Paul's no good, is it, as a name? But very good drummer, though. But
yeah,
they started this band, and Pantera fans, some of them, blamed those guys for breaking up the band. So it was a Pantera fan who killed him. Yeah.
What, shot him?
Yeah, shot him. And then he got killed that night by an off-duty cop.
The murderer.
Yeah. So I think a bar staff, like, I think half a dozen died that night. Bar staff.
Oh my God.
Security guard.
Something I did not know.
Yeah, that's a rough story. But anyway, they're really, I like the band a lot. Or, you know.
And the Beatles, did you see them?
But I saw Paul McCartney a couple of weeks ago.
Oh, was it good?
Yeah, so good. Maybe the best concert I've ever been to.
Really?
Yeah.
Did you do Live and Let Die?
Did. Great. You did Live and Let Die with fireworks.
Oh,
Live and Let Die. Bang. It was
banana.
Amazing.
And Tism. I love Tism.
Yeah,
Tism. I think we have to play some Tism.
Yeah, what are your favorite?
Well, I knew Tism because they were around when I was in a band, and then I remember being at a nightclub, Trath. We used to go to like alternative nightclubs. There was one called Thrash on Bridge Road, where it wasn't your normal doof doof. No, they play like The Cure, all the Goths would get up and dance. They'd play, you know, The Smiths, all the guys in cardigans would get up and dance. They'd play a bit of ska, we get up and skank, you know, that kind of nightclub, like an alternative nightclub.
Yeah, I used to go to some of those in the early 2000s. Next and Bang.
Yeah. You really?
Went to Goo.
Goo. Yeah, well, Goo was a bit like that, wasn't it?
Yeah, the old Metro.
The Metro, yeah. Anyway, there were these two guys there, one short one, one tall one. And so the rumor went around, they're the guys from Tism. So I went up to them and said, hey, are you guys from Tism? And Damien, who's the short one, goes, yeah, who wants to know? I said, I love Tism. He goes, yeah, we are. We're the guys from Tism, whatever.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, I just met them there. Then I would see them around. Now that I knew what they looked like, they're both teachers.
Right.
They're both teachers in the public system.
Ron Hilliberassi.
Yeah, the tall one.
Yeah.
And the short one, Damien. So, yeah, Ron would do more of the shouting.
Yeah.
And the shorter one, Damien.
Damien was more of the singer.
Yeah, Peter was the tall one.
Yeah, Peter.
Anyway.
I never really tried to delve into their... I mean...
Because when you do...
Damien Cowles sort of, he's outed himself.
I interviewed him
on Channel 31 a couple of years ago. So I was really...
Yeah, he says he's a guy from Tism, which is, you know... but they, you know what, they just had great pop songs.
Amazing, yeah.
Great, and funny. Like we used to love Foster's Car Park Boogie.
Yeah.
Because that was a nightclub in Dandenong.
Right.
Foster's Night Spot. You know, I'm a bogan baby, always was. I'm only happy when I punch a mod. And they had that one about being a uni student and drinking red wine and listening to The Doors, which...
They didn't like The Doors much. Or didn't sing. No. Well, you never really know what they do and don't like. I mean, they sang a lot of footy songs, I'm pretty sure.
They love footy, I think.
Some of them. I think Ron Hilliberassi loves it and Damien Cowell has no interest in it.
Yeah, well, Damien used to be a copywriter at Triple M.
Right.
Because when I started working there in the 90s as a comedy writer, they employed comedy writers for a while on Triple M, and everyone would say, that guy in there, he's Scott from Tism.
Fuck.
But I knew him. I mean, yeah.
So you didn't ever play with him or anything, did you?
No. One of my friends played in him. Yeah, well, I was in a band in the 80s, and we weren't very good musicians, but one of my other friends was in... he was in a band called Finland Station, and he would fill in on Tism because they wore masks.
Right.
So they just needed someone who could play the drum machine and dance occasionally, and he would fill in when one of the guys didn't want to do it. But they always had to have the singers, though, and I think it was always the same guitarist whose name was Sean Kelly, not the guy from the Moles, but another Sean Kelly.
Yeah, so I think the guitarist switched about somewhere around halfway through.
Yeah.
But yeah, I don't... Tism, I mean, I'm a bit of a Tism nerd, but I'm not like...
Full on.
I never went quite to stalking, so I knew all of them. But I think it went from Leek Van Vlaahen or something like
that. Yeah.
And then he must have left, and then they got in a guy called Token Blackman.
One of them died, too.
I think it was Token Blackman. Yeah.
The keyboardist died. I think he was a lawyer.
Yeah.
One of them died. They were all from the same school. They were all from a Catholic... I think it's... Is it Mazenod, which is for Melbourne people? It's on the southeastern freeway.
Right.
And it's kind of like the classic lower socioeconomic Catholic. It's not a posh one.
Right.
It's like a... And always... They turned out a lot of footballers.
I think it's
Mazenod.
They're the schools that I went to.
Yeah, like you went to. Yeah. Very similar to St. Bede's where you went.
The ones where I used to ride past the Bentley Secondary in my shitty St. James blazer. And they're yelling out like homophobic slurs.
Yeah.
You know, nice blazer. And yeah. I'm like, what are you talking about? Our school's shitter than yours.
Yeah.
What are you...
Yeah, well, we had the same thing. I went to the high school, but there was a Catholic school down the road where Lawrence Mooney was a student. Anyway,